Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. All your texts, all your voicemails, anything you got for us, drop it there for us, 331-979-1369. Back here on a Thursday to do mailbag, we jumped over yesterday's episode, and we're going to do mailbag today, so we got a few voicemails to play. We got some text messages as well. A lot of people texted us in and dropped their favorite United Center memory, so we talked a little bit about the 25-year anniversary earlier this week. So if you do have a memory and you didn't get a chance to drop that, you can do that at our text and voicemail line or tweet at us at Locked On Bulls. But Matt, how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to diving into some mailbag stuff today. A couple of really interesting hypotheticals on our voicemail line, and there's one text we got about favorite United Center memories that really made me laugh. That includes a lot of vomiting emojis. So we got a lot of bases to cover.
That's great. So again, 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Let's just get right into it. Let's grab our first voicemail. This one comes from a frequent caller in Patrick.
Hi guys, this is Patrick. I have a few things I want to talk about. One, I want to ask you guys, have you seen the YouTube video of A Day in the Life of Kobe White? I believe it was done by Slam. In the video, it starts off with him doing a dunk, and I gotta say, I know he's not known for being a leaper, but I thought the dunk was pretty impressive. A couple other things about that video, Kobe mentions that he loves to sing, and there's actually a part where he does sing like an old Chris Brown song, and he really messes up on it. Like, he sounds bad. So if you guys ever do an interview with him, I want to encourage you guys to put him on the spot and ask him to sing something. And secondly, did you guys think if Kirk Heinrich would have been on the Bulls in 2010 and 11 when they faced Miami in those conference finals, would have that series been a lot different? Because I felt like Keith Bogans in that shooting guard role was just the ultimate weak link in that series. And I think if Kirk would have been there, I mean, maybe the Bulls would have stretched that series to 7 with him, because he was always good for a couple of good games in the playoffs like that. But let me know. Take care, guys. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Patrick. So to touch on his first part of his question, I haven't seen this Kobe White video. I went and looked at it on YouTube. I'll have to go watch it after we're done recording. But it was done by, he was right, it was done by Slam, and it was the first day he was in Chicago. So it kind of goes around, they go to the staples of the tourist spots in Chicago, like the Bean, and they try a couple of other places before they head to the White Sox game to throw out the first pitch. But interesting that he is a singer, and I guess from what Patrick is telling us, he messed up on a Chris Brown song. So Matt, if we do ever get a chance to interview him, which we would love to, we'll have to ask him if there's a favorite song he likes to sing, and if his rendition will be better than the one he had on Slam.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you want to sing and you want to belt your heart out to some of your favorite jams and you're not the most gifted singer in the world, you know, you're not an opera singer, you're not, you know, cracking the Billboard Top 100, that's okay. I love singing. I'm not very good at it. I'm okay, but you give me one of my favorite jams while I'm, you know, cleaning myself in the shower, you bet your ass I'm belting it. So I would love to see that side of Coby White because he seems like a really nice kid. He seems like a very likable kid. But so far, entering the, you know, the bigness of NBA media and getting all this attention as a top 10 overall pick, even though he was a pretty widely known kid, you know, even playing as a freshman at UNC in a big program like that, the NBA is just leaps and bounds, even more attention. And he has seemed in some ways to just be kind of like a guy who comes across as a little shy, a little timid when he's talking with the media. So yeah, I would love to see that side of Coby White. I'm also really intrigued, speaking of that, to see what Coby White behaves like and does when they shoot some of that stuff on media day where they put the players up on the Jumbotron for, like, you know, in between timeouts in the games to, like, get the crowd hyped up, or when they ask them silly little, like, you know, rapid fire Q&A stuff. I can't wait to see that kind of stuff about Coby White because he seems like a great kid with a fascinating background, and in some ways a tragic background with his family life. But I can't wait to see that personality of his come out even more.
Yeah, I think between his personality and maybe getting a little bit more out of Carter, and same thing with Markkanen, and hopefully he opens up a little bit more. I think you've got a lot of really young, vibrant, like very excited personalities in that locker room. So hopefully Coby White helps that as well. Before we get to Patrick's second part of his question, I want to detour a little bit just because we're talking about Coby White. So we had a tweet yesterday from Angelo86 talking about our recent episode where we were talking about Coby White at the end, Matt. And he said, "I'm starting to hate listening to Locked On Bulls. They always have a pessimistic view on everything Bulls except for Lowry. It's the only player they praise, and he's not even a proven star yet. White will outball every point guard and start." So let me just finish up here. So I responded and just said, you know, what we said on the podcast was to be very patient with Coby White. And the fact that, again, I will repeat this, just because Coby White doesn't start doesn't mean that he isn't improving or he isn't an important part of this team as a rookie. I don't think,
or that you and I both like don't like him as an addition to the team.
That's just not true.
Neither of us have said that. We were just saying, hey, be realistic. And the realistic expectation is he ain't starting, certainly at least to begin the season. I would even still be surprised if he is, you know, assuming no injuries to other guys in the rotation in that backcourt. If everyone's healthy, Coby White is not starting at any point this season, in my opinion. And I and that's not disrespecting Coby White. That's saying he is a very young rookie who has a lot of learning and a lot of developing to do.
Yeah, if they were going to plan to start Coby White and just let him battle through some of the rookie difficulties. Look at Carter for a second. Carter had a bunch of problems last year, and that's not to say that he's not going to be a good player. It's just you struggle as a rookie going from college basketball to the NBA. It happens to a lot of guys. So for me, maybe you want to say it's a pessimistic view, that's fine, but I'm okay with saying, you know what, be patient, and even if he doesn't start at all this season, that doesn't mean that the development isn't bad or his ceiling all of a sudden dropped because he didn't start his rookie year. I mean, they wouldn't have gone out and spent the amount of money that they did on Satoransky and also bringing back Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono if they were completely set on starting Coby White from day one when he entered camp. Like, so they spent money outside of there to secure their position, and I think Satoransky and also Chris Dunn you still have too, so we're not being pessimistic. We're just saying to be very patient, even if he doesn't start throughout this first year.
And I mean, come on, what is that other junk about the only thing we're positive about is Lowry? That's a joke. We gush about Zach LaVine on this podcast.
We gush about
the Otto Porter trade on this podcast. We gushed about the smart offseason signings of Satoransky and Thad Young on this podcast. Like, what are you talking about, man? And what are you listening to? Open your ears. Get yourself a Q-tip and clean that earwax out of there. My God.
You know, maybe he's a relatively new listener, but I feel like we were in the minority of fans that actually like Zach LaVine signing when they signed him 2 years ago to the contract that they did. So many fans were bitching and complaining about the amount of money that they gave to Zach LaVine, and we were the only ones that were defending it. So agreed. I mean, Otto Porter we love. Wendell Carter Jr. we absolutely loved last year. I mean, I don't know who out of the Bulls Nation played defense more for Wendell Carter Jr. than we did. And, you know, I even went back. Go back and look through my tweets, and you can see the video. And maybe I'll retweet it back to the timeline about the amount of fouls Wendell Carter Jr. was getting called against him. So we had his back. We have a lot of these guys back. So it's not, we're not being pessimistic either. I think it's just this whole dead period of the NBA. People are all of a sudden thinking that we're being negative about the Bulls. But yeah, we love Zach LaVine, love the young guys that are on this team. So I would say,
and really excited to see what Coby White can do, but tempering our expectations to a realistic level. That's
so it. So back to Patrick's question really quick. The second part of his question, talking about Keith Bogans. I was just telling you before we started recording that Keith Bogans might be one of my least favorite Bulls from that era.
I mean, if you plug a competent two guard into that starting five, the Bulls with Derrick Rose, a competent two guard, Luol, Boozer, and Joakim may have had a better shot at taking down LeBron in the Heat either in 2011 or 2012. And they tried to do it the following year with Rip Hamilton, but Rip Hamilton was old and washed up and couldn't stay healthy. So, I mean,
Rip Hamilton with his mask.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I forgot he was a Bull for a second. If the Bulls add, remember when that happened? If the Bulls added 2006 Rip Hamilton to the roster, then hell yeah, that would have been fantastic. But they didn't. They added 2012 Rip Hamilton.
Rip Hamilton was so fun to play with.
But yeah, I mean, like the hypothetical about could they have knocked off the Heat in that conference final series in 2011 if you swap in Kirk Heinrich for Bogans? No, I don't think so.
I don't think so, I mean, either.
Like, the Heat were just so much better. Well, maybe not so much better. That I don't want to insult, you know, the Bulls and insult the fans who thought that they had a real shot in that series. But, like, you know, and I've said this before, LeBron James switching on to Derrick Rose, end of game, end of series. That's all it took. If there were a all-star caliber two-guard instead of Bogans, then, yeah, maybe you're talking about an even series and the Bulls having a chance to knock them off. And as much as I love Kirk Heinrich, and as much as I love Kirk Heinrich being a thorn in the side of LeBron James while Heinrich wore a Bulls jersey multiple times throughout his career, and who could forget the time where he literally just wrapped LeBron in a bear hug when LeBron was barreling down the lane and tackled him. Our buddy Mark Kay over in Australia, I'm pretty sure, actually just tweeted a picture of that the other day, and he said, like, this is the greatest picture ever taken. A little bit of a hyperbole there, but not much. I loved Kirk Heinrich, and I loved how hard he was willing to defend, especially guys like LeBron who were so much bigger than him. Stand in, take charges, all that kind of stuff. Would it have been a better option than Bogans to have Kirk on that starting five? Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think it gives the Bulls the edge to win that series.
God, just looking back at that Heat team, the first time that they won a championship, outside of Bosh, Wade, and LeBron, that team was junk, man. Like, that team was terrible. There's no way that team, like, if you plucked that team, prime D Wade, prime Chris Bosh, prime LeBron James, and you put them up against any of the teams in the last 2 or 3 years, maybe this Golden State Warriors team, I think that they would get absolutely destroyed. They would get absolutely destroyed with the amount of players, their supporting cast of players, guys like Mario Chalmers and Norris Cole and Udonis Haslam. That team was junk, man.
Can't forget Chris Birdman Anderson.
Yeah, him and...
Was he on that team in 2012?
Maybe a year prior.
Or was it only the 13 team?
Yeah, it was a year prior. 2011, 2012, he was not. But former Chicago Bull, Eddie Curry, was on that team. And
Eddie Curry. A very old Shane Battier was on that Miami team in 2012.
Yeah, so I think the long story short here is that I still don't think Kirk Heinrich would have made that big of an impact to the point where the Bulls would have been able to get past this Heat team. But still, that Heat team was weird, too, because they were getting clutch shots from, again, guys like Mario Chalmers, where shortly after LeBron left the Heat, Mario Chalmers' career pretty much disappeared. So just weird things happened throughout that series. I don't think Kirk Heinrich would have made that big of an impact, though. But thanks for the call, Patrick. Appreciate it. Let's get on to our next voicemail. This one comes from the 251.
Hi, guys. Got a great off-season question here for you. At least I think it is. Just thinking about the top 50 players of all time and, you know, where some of the Bulls lying there, I think we're really kind of looking really much just like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. Where do you think Scottie would fall now? They redid the top 50. I'm sure players like James Worthy and Dominique Wilkins would fall out as Tim Duncan and Dirk Nowitzki and LeBron James were added in. Where do you think Scottie Pippen falls in there, and which players would you take out and add in? I know that last part's a little long, but main question is, where do you think Scottie Pippen would fall now? All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. I think this is a first-time caller, so appreciate it. But this is a very interesting question, Matt, because you sent me the list of the 50 greatest players when they did this for the 50th anniversary of the NBA, and they haven't redone this list since. I mean, you think about that, though. The 1996, right, this list was released. Think about that. We're 23 years past that. How many players would you add to that top 50 from that point to present day that would kind of bump a lot of these guys out? And Scottie Pippen, I think, would be one of them, right?
And it's not just homerism, but I actually, when I first listened to this voicemail a few days ago, I went and looked at the top 50 list that was released in 96 and then started looking at some of the players since then who obviously should be added to the list, and then maybe some who could arguably be added to the list. And for me, Scottie still is in. Scottie stays. It's close, but Scottie stays. There are some people, I think, that you could knock off this list before Scottie Pippen, including Nate Archibald, Dave Bing, Dave Cowens, Dolph Schayes, Bill Sharman, Wes Unseld, Bill Walton. Sam Jones was a part of a great Celtics dynasty, but he's not a top 50 player, you know, in history. I think you could probably knock Lenny Wilkins off of this list. There are a few more. You might be able to, I know it's heresy, you might be able to also make an argument for Pete Maravich getting knocked off this list before Scottie Pippen does. I mean, you know, we were on a recent show going through the all-decade teams and whether or not, you know, of the 90s teams, Scottie deserves to be on there. Some people thought, you know, he was just the Robin to MJ's Batman and gets all the accolades because of that. Go back and look at some of Scottie's stats and individual honors in that decade, and it is insane. He made eight straight all-defensive first teams in addition to a handful of all-NBA first, second, and third teams in the 90s. He was also third in MVP voting in 1994. The guy was a beast. So I will not have any of that Scottie slant. It's a good question. It's a fair question. But for me, Scottie makes the list. All of those names that I rattled off, I would kick off the list before I kicked off Scottie. But, you know, when you talk about the names you add to the list, it's already pretty long. I mean, you're locking in Kobe, LeBron, and Tim Duncan right off the bat, right?
Absolutely.
There. Then you could probably beyond that add KG, Kevin Garnett, Dirk, and Dwayne Wade. I would say three more locks right there.
The way I was trying to think of this is I would probably take off. There's probably a dozen guys on this list right now and from 1996 that you could easily remove before having to even have the discussion about Scottie Pippen. But I think that there's probably over a dozen guys that you have to add in that span from 96 to 2019 that you're going to have to add being a part of that top 50. You just named, five or six guys right off the top of your head?
That was six right there.
Guys like Ray Allen, I think he's definitely a part
Allen
of the top 50.
Allen could be on this list. Allen Iverson definitely is on this list.
Guys like current players too. Like right now, like even this list came out when
I mean, like Kevin Durant and Steph Curry are both going to be
agreed.
On this list.
So that's like we're at 8-9 players.
You could also make an argument for I know people hate him now because he's terrible on TV and makes bad predictions, and you know everybody pokes fun at him. You could make the argument for Paul Pierce being on this list too.
You very well could. I'm trying to think of other more recent players too, guys over the last 5 years or so that would be added. Even if they're still young and they still have a 10-year career left in them, they would still be a part of this.
Well, it's kind of hard to add guys who are like in their young prime right now, because you know you don't know how their careers are going to finish. But like you know, if they maintain their trajectory, then you're talking about guys like Anthony Davis and Giannis and heck, I mean, like, are you putting either Westbrook or James Harden on this list?
Yeah, probably. Honestly, probably. Probably James Harden. James Harden's probably got to go on this top 50 list. I mean, the dude's been unbelievable. Westbrook, there's probably a conversation. He's kind of in that same realm. Probably not as significant as Scottie, but, like, he's still in the conversation of being added to this list. I'm trying to think of other guys too.
Like, yeah, I mean, like the dude's averaged a triple double for the last three seasons. I know people scoff at that and say triple doubles don't mean anything, and he's stat pad, whatever. Okay, he was the first person to do it in damn near 40 years, and then he did it 3 years in a row. Like,
I'm thinking of other guys too.
Come
like,
on,
where would you put big time point guards like Jason Kidd and Steve Nash? Would they be a part of this list too?
I think Kidd and Nash are definitely two names that you need to consider adding.
So we're already
absolutely
at least 12,
I would probably
13 guys.
Put Kidd maybe a little tick ahead of Nash. You know, I know Nash has the MVPs. A lot of people make the argument that that's just because the league wanted to take a spotlight away from Kobe Bryant at the time, but I mean, you can make an argument for Nash and Kidd being on this list. Another name that we haven't mentioned yet, who was a stalwart to MJ and Pip for years and never won a ring because of the Bulls, but was not on this list in 1996, Reggie Miller. Like, maybe a borderline, but I mean, come on. Reggie was amazing.
I think Reggie Miller adds to that list, definitely. I think he's on there, no doubt. Now, he's no doubt on there. Somebody else I was thinking of, too, just from those early 2000s, just because they weren't a part of this list before. But what about like Gary Payton? I feel like Gary Payton should maybe be a part of this. Maybe he's like a little bit farther down on the list in terms of guys that are being added. But I mean, he's still pretty fucking good too. So like, there's a lot of guys.
And not that it necessarily has to be position by position, because when they created the top 50, they didn't like evenly break it down through, all right, this many guards, this many forwards, this many centers. But like, currently, John Stockton is on the list. Would you put Gary Payton ahead of John Stockton? Because I would.
No, yeah, it would be John Stockton before Gary Payton. But how about, like, Dirk Nowitzki? Like, we didn't even say Dirk Nowitzki. He's another guy that would be.
I said
oh,
Dirk.
You did? Okay, good.
He was, yeah, so I, like, Duncan, Kobe, LeBron are the first three that I mentioned that are, like, absolute locks. And then the three damn near close to locks that I mentioned next were KG, Dirk, and Wade.
That's a good call. So we have, like, 15 guys that we could be added to this list, just naming them off the top of our head. That would be added, and I think that then you get close to the top 35 if you're adding all 15 of those guys in. Like, you can remove some of the guys that are early on, like talking about predating the 1960s. Those guys could probably get removed, and you could add some of these other guys that have been more recent. But still, you're getting into a conversation where you're getting close to where Scottie would be up there. But I still think, ultimately, if you made the list now, Scottie Pippen's probably still on the list.
I think so, too. You know, and I named about a dozen or so players that I and most of them from the old days that I thought I could tick off that list. And not just because they were from the old days before I was born and watching basketball, don't know who they are, but having gone and looked at their stats and read some about all of their career achievements. And yeah, I still think that Scottie clears the top 50 because he was one of the best two-way players in the league for a full decade, with some good years in his young years in the 80s, and then, you know, some additional solid years when he moved off away from the Bulls, you know, after the dynasty broke up.
Yeah, some of these guys that are like back from the 60s, 50s, and 40s, I don't recognize their names, but I wonder if they had an impact.
Like Dave DeBuscher, like you could probably take Dave DeBuscher off that list. He had a good career, but I mean, he's not better than, you know, most of the guys that we just named. Clyde the Glide Drexler is on this original list from 96. He might be a guy who gets kicked off. Because Clyde was great, but like absolutely of the 15 or so guys that we name, modern guys who need to be added, I would take more than half of them over Clyde Drexler.
Yeah, I wonder if these get younger or these older guys, the guys from the 60s, 50s, and 40s, would have to see like what kind of impact that they had in growing the league too, because that's probably important. I mean, if we're not just going based off of stats, because it's hard to grab stats from guys from back then. They didn't have as many. So comparing that would be kind of difficult, but I would wonder what their impact was in growing the NBA to where it is right now, if that was part of why they were added to the top 50. But I think overall what we're saying here is Scottie Pippen would still be on the list even if you added the 15 guys that we kind of named. And there's probably guys we haven't even thought of, too, that would be in this conversation as well. So good question. I think I'm with you. Scottie Pippen's still on this list, even if you add some of the modern day players into this list.
And it's only a matter of time until Lauri Markkanen is on this list, right?
Yeah, the year is 2035 and we're talking about adding Lauri Markkanen to the top 50 greatest players.
We've got some waiting to do, but you know, so when they release the next one for the 100-year anniversary of the league, then you know, Markkanen's career will either have come and gone or be in its twilight. And yeah, he'll be on that list for sure.
So thanks for the call. Let's get to our last voicemail, and then we'll wrap up with a few text messages. This is from Darian.
Yo, what's up, guys? I was calling in. I want to ask you guys some questions today. And I was thinking, you guys gave a top five that day. And I was thinking, what are you guys' top five Bulls memories? I was born in 95, so these are my top five for when I was alive, that I was alive to see. I'm not going anything that I wasn't alive to see. And my top five is Ben Gordon. I think he dropped 48 of 50 on Milwaukee. That was one of my best Bulls moments, right? That's the fifth. Fourth one is John Salomon. I know nobody don't remember this one probably. John Salomon, I think he dropped 38 or 40 or some shit on Boston or Sacramento. I forget which team it was. Absolutely killed him. I love that moment. Third, Derrick Rose game with a shot over Cleveland. Second, Taj Gibson dunk up with Dwayne Wade because that was like we finally beat Miami. And my number one Bulls moment ever that I would probably love and maybe fall in love with the Bulls, it would have to be Kirk Heinrich when he went charging Roger Arlando. Those three years right there, that Boston series, that makes you love the Bulls for some reason.
All right, thanks for the call. Darian and I's timeline kind of lines up. I was born in 94. He was born in 95. So these I do definitely remember. The one that caught me, though, was the John Salmons one. I do remember this.
Dude.
When he dropped 38.
I love me some John Salmons, man.
In 2008, 2009, he dropped 38. He only spent a short amount of time with the Bulls, but when he did, that was... It was weird to see him light up the way he did for the Bulls in that short time. But, yeah, I definitely remember those two. And, of course, Ben Gordon's monstrous games. I don't know exactly what he dropped. Was it 48 or 50? Somewhere close to that. But those are good memories.
Yeah, something like that. You know, Ben Gordon hit big shots in that epic series against Boston that Darian mentioned. John Salmons was, like, a forgotten part of that team, the 2009 team. That fought Boston through all those overtimes and forced the seventh game. Everybody remembers Ben Gordon's big shots. People remember like Brad Miller drilling that three from the top of the key in that one game. And of course, the most iconic moment of that entire series, Joakim stripping the ball away from Paul Pierce coast to coast, gets the dunk, gets the and one, you know, sends the UC into a frenzy. That was like young Joakim. It wasn't even in a top knot yet. He was still rocking the ponytail down. And I mean, even that series alone, like Darian was saying, just created so many amazing memories. But John Salmons is often an overlooked part of it. Salmons was getting buckets. And like you said, a very brief stint. So a lot of Bulls fans forget about him. But I mean, just so amazing. And then the other one he mentioned, I mean, Kirk Heinrich charging at Rajon Rondo. I mean, like, is there anything better than that?
And who would have thought Rajon Rondo would have ended up being a Bull like a handful of years after that? But that was a great moment. That goes up there with like the, we had mentioned it earlier this week. We were talking about United Center moments, but when Nazi Muhammad threw down LeBron James in the playoffs, that was a great moment. At least for Bulls fans, it
one
was
of the biggest flops of
so
all time.
Funny. But John Salmons, man, 2009 game six against Boston, like you were saying, to force game seven, he had 35 points in that game, 13 for 22, and he was 5 for 9
yeah.
from three. That is ridiculous. People forget that he was
a
big
monster.
Part of forcing that game seven. He played 60 minutes in that game, in 60 minutes in that game to force game seven. So
yeah.
People do forget the legend of John Salmons.
NBA, so did you see like the last 24 to 48 hours, like NBA TV is going through and doing each team. It's like they dedicate a day to like this team and they show a bunch of like flashback
yeah,
games.
I haven't
that
recorded.
Team.
I haven't watched and all of it. I caught bits and pieces of it. I caught one where they were talking about Will Perdue.
Yeah.
And they were talking about something else too, pre-90s. I didn't get to catch the end of it, though, but I have it all recorded. I'm going to have to watch it. Do they do replays of games, too? Because I saw some commentary as well.
Yeah, they replayed a number of games, including recent ones, or more recent ones, not just from the, you know, the 90s. Because, like, they played MJ's double nickel game at the Garden, but they also... They played that game six against Boston, and then after that, I believe it was game one against the Pacers in 2011. So, you know, Derrick Rose had, like, you know, just been or was about to be rewarded MVP, and then he poured in, like, 38 or 39 points in their first playoff game against the Pacers. And it was just like, I just saw people tweeting about it while I was watching the Cubs game last night. And I was like, I can't, like, it would break my heart. Like, I can't go back and watch Derrick Rose just lighting people up in a playoff game with his young, intact kneecaps. I can't do it. But I'm sure it's a great walk down memory lane.
For sure. So thanks for the call. We'll get into a few other Bulls memories too here with some of our text messages that we have before we kind of wrap up the episode today. Let's just take this one, 785. It says, my only United Center memory was on April 13th, a couple years ago. The Bulls played the Bucks and nobody played. Cameron Payne was quite literally the best player on the court.
That's the one that has the barfing emojis.
I hope you didn't pay very much for those tickets, man. And if you did, you should have gotten a refund for that.
I mean, he paid a non-zero amount, so it was too much, man. So April Bulls basketball for the past two seasons has been like, why even there? You're watching a bunch of G League guys.
I feel bad for Bulls fans that
honestly, God bless the Bulls fans that actually showed up to the United Center, especially towards the back ends of this season and the season prior. Because, and like, the, you know, there's been, you know, we know that, like, the TV ratings have been down during the first 2 years of this rebuild. The United Center, they're still at the top of the list as far as, like, sellout crowds and ticket sales, but actual capacity and butts in seats, those numbers have taken a big hit over the last couple of years. And people are saying, you know, season ticket holders are after so many years of being loyal season ticket holders, are making the tough decision and relinquishing their season tickets and all these things. But if you are like a, because some people just go to the United Center who are like tourists, right? And maybe they've been like Bulls fans because of the glory days, and it's like on their lifelong bucket list to go to a game at the United Center and see Benny the Bull doing his antics and watch the Love of Bulls and just take in the environment, see the MJ statue, all that stuff. But so like that, you know, that represents a portion of the people who are still at the United Center in April when this team has been this god awful. But some of them are season ticket holders who are just there, or single ticket, or, you know, single game ticket buyers who are there because they want to be, because they're that big of a fan. And to those people, I say, good for you. But, you know, if money's tight, maybe, you know, just take a look at your expenses and reorganize some things until this team is worth watching.
The one thing I will say is, at least, you know, if you're trying to go to some of these bigger name games where you're going to see opponents that are actually going to be fun to watch against, it's kind of cool that the Lakers are going to be here relatively early this season. So that was one I think a lot of people were complaining about because they weren't sure if LeBron was going to play or not. He ultimately did back in March, but this will be one that I think is going to be ticket prices for this game are going to be ridiculous because you're going to get Anthony Davis and you're going to get LeBron coming here playing together first time against the Bulls. So that's going to be a big one. That's November 5th. But I feel bad for a lot of Bulls fans that, you know, you can buy tickets that are a little bit cheaper when you buy them towards the back end of the season. But bad things do happen like this where you end up finding your team has a bunch of injuries like the Bulls did last year, and then they end up throwing a bunch of G Leaguers out there, and feel bad for people who spend $80, $90, $100 to go to the United Center to watch these games, especially at the back end of the season. And those are for tickets that are like in the 300 level. You want to sit in the 100 level closer to the court, you're talking about $150 to $200 a ticket, probably more than that. And even when the Bulls are just as bad as they've been last year. So the NBA's, I know they're trying to figure this out because this isn't the only place that happens here in Chicago. Chicago, but they got to figure something out to where fans don't get screwed over for spending this amount of money to ultimately not be able to see guys that they really ultimately want to see. But I know the Bulls too, last season, they bought out a lot of sections and ended up donating those tickets to companies and sponsors that they had and giving those tickets away to try to kind of fill up some of those seats. And I know the Bulls are probably not the only team that does this, especially teams that are completely out of it. So if you can snag yourself some free tickets at the end of the season, it's worth going. But don't spend $80, $90, $100 to go to see a bunch of G Leaguers, especially if the Bulls are out of it. Because I feel bad for people who do that. And it's not fair.
But, you know, it would be, and like I hope, you know, and you and I have expressed our level of optimism versus pessimism about the Bulls being kind of like a playoff team on the bubble if people stay healthy and they take a significant step forward this year. It would just be nice for the United Center to be a packed, raucous place for home games that matter in March and April if the Bulls are still sniffing the playoffs. Because I feel like, you know, I personally have forgotten what that feels like. I bet a lot of the fan base has forgotten what that feels like. You know, you and I went to that game with one of our loyal listeners, Robert, a couple years ago, and it was the awesome, like, Jimmy versus Levine duel that the Bulls ended up winning, and, like, the crowd definitely, like, got into it as the game went on. And there have been a couple of games where the crowd is into it because, you know, one of the young star players is playing well, or it's, like, a big opponent, like you were saying. But those games and those moments where you feel like the United Center used to feel, the way I remember the United Center feeling as a kid when I was watching MJ and Scottie and those guys, like, that building went nuts. And the Bulls just haven't had the opportunity to have a rabid crowd like that because they haven't played a game that mattered in two years.
And I'm thinking about, too, the game that they played against the 76ers this past season, too. That was probably the closest to excitement that the crowd has been since that game. There's probably a handful of other ones I'm forgetting. But, yeah, the Timberwolves one sticks out major for me. And then also sitting in that 76ers game back in March, too, where the Bulls ended up winning on a buzzer beater. But other than that, the crowd's pretty quiet at the United Center. And they don't get pumped up that much just because there isn't that much to watch. I'm hoping that the Bulls stay in it, that games are a little bit more exciting, people start to fill the stands a little bit more. But we'll find out once they start playing games. But thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Thanks for the memory. One more, Matt, and then we'll get out of here. It says, from the 847, says, I figured this would be a good time to ask this because it's the dead part of the offseason. Of the current young core of Kobe White, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., which player do you think has the highest ceiling? And if you had to trade one of them, which player would you be most comfortable with parting with? And who do you think has the highest value in today's trade market? Thanks. That's from Will Go Bulls. So who has the highest ceiling of those guys, Matt? And who would you be most comfortable with trading? And who has the highest value? So really a three-part question here.
Yeah, three good questions. You know, the first one I'll answer quickly. I think Lowry has the highest ceiling, and I would probably put Wendell behind him with the second highest ceiling. And that's no disrespect to Zach LaVine, but I feel like LaVine has already, especially this past season, showed us that he's already, you know, moving towards what his ceiling is. Maybe people out there believe he could be a whole lot better, but I think we're already starting to see that. Whereas Markkanen and Wendell, I think their ceilings are the highest. Who would I be most comfortable parting with in that group? Honestly, right now, and it's, you know, it's no knock on him, we just haven't seen much, but probably Kobe White. And I think of that young core of players that are listed here, Kobe, LaVine, Lowry, Wendell, he's the one who I think has the shortest ceiling to be a real difference maker in the NBA. Again, not knocking Kobe, just based on small sample size, 1 year of college ball, and what I know in my opinion about Kobe White, the basketball player, as of today. Most comfortable trading, I would say Kobe. Who do I think has the highest value in today's trade market? Some might say Lowry, some might say Wendell. Right now, because of his contract, I honestly might say LaVine. What about you?
Yeah, I think as far as who is the highest trade value, I'll start from the back and go forward. highest trade value on this team right now, probably, I think probably Lauri Markkanen, just because of the things that we saw. I know the injury concerns maybe play a factor in for other teams trading for him, but the most value you're going to get in return is probably for one of these young guys, either Lauri or Wendell. And I think, I know Zach LaVine does have a decent trade value. All these guys to me are somewhere similar in trade value, but if I had to pick one, it'd probably be Lauri Markkanen, and he's got the highest trade value. If I had to pick who has the highest ceiling among these guys, honestly, I think Wendell Carter Jr. has probably the highest ceiling of all four of these guys. And that's not to knock Lauri either, but I legitimately think because Carter can play both sides of the ball, and we didn't see all that much offense from him last year, and I think that was part in struggles of just getting the dude the ball and having to switch from Fred Hoiberg's offense to Jim Boylan's and then him ultimately getting an injury. I still think that there's a ton of potential there for Carter to be a really good offensive player. And then you add in the almost elite level defense that we're going to get for from him and develop over the next couple of years. I think he's probably got the highest ceiling. And Markkanen's right there. And same thing, I think you're spot on about LaVine. I think he's already approaching what his ceiling is. And anything beyond this is just icing on the cake. For Coby White, it's kind of hard to tell. Like, college ball is very hard to, is a hard way to predict what they're going to do in the NBA. So I'd like to see a little bit more from him. So I would go unknown there at this point. So highest ceiling, Carter for me. Player with the most trade value, probably Lauri Markkanen. And what was the third? Most comfortable partying with. Interesting question here. I think I'm with you too on Coby White. Just because I haven't seen anything from him in the NBA, it for me, it would be like giving up a draft pick. I don't know what that draft pick is going to be. Coby White being similar to that, I would be okay with parting with him. But do I see the Bulls trading or making any moves for any four of these guys relatively soon? Probably not. But that would be the guy that I would be most comfortable with.
Come on. So this text was sent from Will. Come on, Will. Why couldn't you include Chris Dunn or Denzel Valentine in the most comfortable trading category? That would have made the answer so much easier. Yes to both.
That's for sure. And then I think most likely to get traded this season, probably Denzel and Chris Dunn 1A and 1B as well. So we'll find out.
Oh, I mean, like, Chris Dunn is 1A for sure. Like, if he's not on, if he's not gone by the deadline, I don't know what the hell the Bulls are doing.
So I guess we'll find out what moves that they decide to make. But yeah, interested to hear what fans think. That's a pretty good question. So drop us your reaction to that. Most comfortable with trading, who you think has the highest ceiling, and who do you think has the highest trade value on the market today? And that's talking about today, not their future potential.
Hey, come on, you can't trade away Denzel Valentine because he's going to be on his way to a sixth man of the year season. You can't trade away a guy like that.
Well, they traded the sixth man of the year candidate last year in Bobby Portis, so maybe they will go for 2 years in a row now.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. Oh, I love Bobby.
Hit us up with your reaction, 331-979-1369. Drop us your questions on Twitter if you want, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. That's going to about do it for us here at Locked On Bulls. Make sure you're subscribed to the show. It's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls to get our episodes as soon as they drop. We'd appreciate it, too, if you left us a review, iTunes, and Stitcher, and anywhere else you get your podcast that you're able to leave a review. We would love for you guys to leave us a review, how you like the show, things that you like about it would help us help you guys. So again, subscribe, leave us a review as well. For Locked On Bulls, for Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out of here, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Would you rather have to go to the bathroom in a giant cat litter box inside your house? Only. No toilets. Litter box. Or anywhere you want, but only outside. You could only go outside. So you could choose the litter box inside, but, and then you could go anywhere else you want, but it has to be outside.
Well, I'm just going to go outside.
Oh, no. No, you don't.
Unfortunately, that's wrong.
The right answer would have been litter box in that situation.
Oh, man, no litter box.
So you would have that might have officially crossed the line, by the way. That might have done it. So.
Well, Keith, we appreciate it. We know you got a bunch of stuff to do. Go get ready for practice. Keep up the good work.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com